Frank will play it in. 3.4 seconds to go in the half. They get it into Graham. He shoots from Eudora and flat out nails it.
Well, they deserve
it. Devontae Graham from 29 feet, and the half ends on a Jayhawk three.
Man, Devontae Graham has range, but from Eudora, Brian Haney, that is ultimate range.
That's like 4 miles outside of town. Yeah.
those are always fun calls to do when a guy shoots it from way downtown. I know I've said over the islands that made that from St. Croix, and we were on St. Thomas. It's fun to throw those in there every once in a while, I guess.
Love it. Well, yeah. If we get like a full court shot, we'll toss out Beloit, Glen Elder. You know, we'll get you guys in the mix if it's 75 feet or beyond.
Okay, that sounds good. I'm going to be now cheering for a 75-foot shot, big time, no question. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, with us, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. See Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701, and they do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Not a lot to talk about since we spoke with you last week in regards to on the floor, other than the one game, of course, and that was KU knocking off Nebraska 89-72. And it was a game that, you know, first half, KU looked good, early second, not too bad, and then it seemed like, and certainly his coach self noticed it, that his team just completely took the foot off the gas.
Yeah, that's always difficult when you've got a 20-point lead at the half. How do you maintain the same intensity at the second half? And, it's a situation also where finals week was right around the corner, and you kind of get sometimes either a distracted or a tired team this time of year, and you get a few efforts like that. Good news is, you know, Kansas is good enough to play through that and still win convincingly, as they did versus the Huskers. But obviously, Bill Self, you know, you don't get to 9-1 in terms of the non-conference record and have your head coach call that a B-minus start to the season without having a perfectionist on the sideline. And he knows what it takes to win 13 straight, something they're in pursuit of right now. He knows what it's going to take to get this team to Phoenix and the Final Four. And he's not going to settle for, you know, what he's seen in terms of defensive consistency, rebounding, and free throw shooting. And as good as they've looked at times this year, and the backcourt's played as well as any backcourt in the country, and Frank Mason looks like a first-team All-American. Right now I've seen several first-team All-American lists at the end of the first semester, you know, like quarter poll or whatever, that have him as a resounding consensus pick. As good as all that's been, Coach Self knows that you can't shoot 50% from the free-throw line and win in the league. You can't have some of the defensive inconsistencies that he feels like this team has played with at times, and they got to get more out of the post, and I think that obviously is something that goes without saying. So he is a guy that's certainly pleased with the 9-1 start, but realizes this team's optimal potential, their ceiling, is a long ways away from what we've seen to this point. And so I think he's a guy that's going to stay on him throughout these next couple of games in the non-con. And then guess what, TCU December the 30th in Fort Worth. We're starting Big 12 play earlier than we ever have. And it's going to be a fun couple of months here as KU begins its pursuit of John Wooden's 1967 to 1979 record of 13 straight major conference championships.
One of the things I found encouraging watching the game against Nebraska was Landon Lucas. He seemed to be just more involved, more active, you could say maybe even healthier than he's been, had a little bit of time between games. I thought that was encouraging, 5 for 5. He was active on the glass, and I think he had 12 points.
Yep, didn't miss a free throw either, so he was perfect in shooting the ball. And you're right to say that he looked healthier. I think these last couple of weeks it's been a different Landon Lucas. There was a foot ailment early in the year, then he had a tweaked oblique, according to coach, and we finally see a little more bounce to him, and he's been able to stay in the game, get into a rhythm, play without fouling. You know, you think back to, some of those early games in mid-November when he'd get in for a couple of minutes and boom, boom, back-to-back whistles, and you saw some body language and frustration out of him that you're not used to seeing, and he just never really could get it going. And he was fighting the whistle on top of the foul or the health issues. And so to see him now starting to finally come out of that funk, both physically and in terms of, you know, getting some consistent playing time, it couldn't come at a better time. Because obviously, you know, we had the distraction a week ago with the Carlton Bragg situation that's now been resolved, but you needed to see, you know, that consistency from the post. And knowing that Udoka is going to have his ups and downs, a guy that young, who's 6 years younger than Landon Lucas, and is going to go through growing pains and big stretches where he looks really good and other stretches when he looks like a guy that's only been playing organized basketball for 3.5 years, which is the case with him. So we needed Landon to get it going. And now that the Carlton Bragg thing is firmly in the rearview mirror and you're going to get him back, it just makes you, even better off. So let's hope Landon can keep this going, because for Kansas to realize its optimal potential, you got to get more out of the post. And I was at a speaking engagement with Coach Self yesterday in Kansas City, and he was asked the hypothetical question, if you could add one player from any of your previous 13 Kansas teams to this year's bunch, who would it be? And you might think that's a good question with so many great players Self's had over the years, and it really caused him to stop, pause, and think about it. But he said, man, it's not even close. Slam dunk answer, Joel. And part of that is he feels Joel Embiid is a once-in-a-generational talent and one of the greatest players he will ever coach in terms of what he could come out to be. But secondly, he just feels like, you look at the obvious needs on this team right now. If they had a rim protector like Joel, they had a low-post scorer like Joel, if they had a guy with that type of natural feel for the game and unbelievable athleticism like Joel, as Coach said, we could have some fun. Now, we're already having fun at 9-1, but I think his inference there was this would be the best team in the country and it wouldn't be close. So point is, you're not going to get Joel, but if you can get more out of the post, I think this team has a chance to really start to take off.
Brian Haney, our guest every Thursday at 9:30 here on the Sports Ticket, and his appearance brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. Stop by, see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill in Beloit. Call them 738-5701. They specialize in farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. You mentioned Carlton Bragg a couple times there in describing the post play. And, of course, as you mentioned, hopefully this is in the rearview mirror. Yesterday the charges were dropped against Carlton Bragg. Not a good situation for anybody involved. And I know on Monday on our show, Dusty and I were talking about this. And when I heard that the girlfriend or the girl involved in this case had also been in jail and for a while, I thought to myself, there's much more to this story, and that it could just be an altercation between both, and that both were guilty of whatever. And so I stressed to people on Monday, let's not jump to conclusions. Let's go ahead and gather the facts, because yes, there are many situations where athletes are guilty of doing what has happened, but there's a thing in society, at least it used to be, called innocent until proven guilty. But it seems nowadays in society, we want to convict people before they have a chance to be proven innocent. And I think there are some people, because if you don't like KU, you can start taking shots at KU or take shots at Carlton Bragg personally, which I think is unfair. But there's also today, I think, after this being dismissed yesterday, I think those people that jump to conclusions, quite honestly, not that they have to call Carlton Bragg and apologize, but deep down should be a little bit ashamed of themselves, because we have much more information about what happened, what took place, and now the charges have been dropped. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's all really well said. And, I can't dive too deep into the details here and certainly don't want to make light of anything, involving this case, because clearly, when you have any type of domestic abuse claim, any type of contact, whether it's a guy to a guy or a girl to a girl or a girl to a guy, you hate that, obviously. But I think what we had here late last week was a lot of sports reporters that really aren't trained to cover criminal cases, grabbing whatever they could get their hands on in terms of the police reports. And there were some assumptions made, maybe not necessarily by the reporters, I don't want to throw them under the bus, but what was being put out into the public painted a picture of somebody, being pushed down the stairs, and you think tumbling down a flight of stairs and an aggressive act and all this stuff. And I realized that based on the limited information that they were trying to piece together at the time, they thought that perhaps it was as horrible and egregious as that. I think maybe there were some conclusions jumped to here. And clearly, when they had a chance to review the surveillance footage and saw her role in the incident and saw that it wasn't nearly as pronounced as some were making it out to be 1 week ago, I think, charges were quick to be dropped and Kansas was able to reinstate him. And so, again, that's not to make light of anything that actually did happen on that surveillance footage, but isn't that a vastly different picture in your head than what you were reading on Twitter about last Friday and Saturday morning? Isn't that completely different than what you were thinking about as you started to wonder, boy, is Carlton going to make it on this team? I mean, a lot of people were calling for his immediate removal from the roster because they were really, in their minds, thinking the most horrible scenario possible in terms of a amount of violence between a man and a woman, and that just wasn't at all the case in this instance. And so I give Bill Self and his staff a lot of credit, because I think they felt they knew they could trust Carlton even without having seen the surveillance footage and his account of the story, and they knew early on it was too soon, you know, to react. They had to gather all the evidence, and I think this was their expectation all along, that the real truth would come to light on what actually happened, as opposed to what was maybe misportrayed through social media. And so I think it's great that you know, you've got an athletic department that knows how to handle situations like this, where you pause, step back, allow the process to play out, and then act accordingly from there. That there was no knee-jerk reactions. And that's something that I've never been a huge fan involving social media, because it's instantaneous, which is great.
Yeah.
Also, sometimes you don't get the true facts or the whole story, and a lot of dots get connected that just flat out aren't there, because everybody's in a rush to be first as opposed to necessarily being right. And I think with some of what was being put out there, and maybe a lot of this was from the fans and not just reporters, but with what the fans had to go off of, some of the comments that were being made were just so unfair. And so while this is an incident he can never get back, and while he would still admit, you know what, probably shouldn't have, you know, been in that spot on that night, you know, but hey, it was stop day, and this happens on every campus in the country. That's not to make light of it. When I say it happens, I mean we have incidents of guys and gals out partying, and emotions can run high and all that. It's something I know coaches on every campus dread each year, because you know everybody doesn't have class the next day, mm-hmm. and people are out socializing, and sometimes unfortunate incidents happen. It's clearly something that we're glad to have in the rearview mirror, though, and I think if anything, going forward, I think maybe, you know, we as a reactionary fan base can wait a little bit and let the cake bake, so to speak, before we start making judgments for those that were calling for Carlton to be removed and all of that. Carlton's actually a really good kid. You know, I've been back now for 6 months after the 4 years I spent at Tech, and he's actually been one of the more delightful kids I had a chance to be around. So this was stunning when it first came out, and I'm glad to see that a lot of this is being vindicated for him.
Is Bill Self and the KU and KU in general, are they satisfied with everything is here? It seems to be that way. And the reason I ask this question is the article, The Kansas Star by Jesse Newell. There's one line that stood out to me a little bit that leaves something dangling for me just a little bit. And that is, he says that the defense motion said that Sufi, the girl, was under the influence of alcohol, and Bragg was suspected of alcohol and drug use when he was taken into custody. So I guess the question I have there, I haven't heard anybody say, you know what, he was suspected of that, but no, there was no drug use or this or that. Have we heard anything on that side of it? Or could that still be something that could maybe get Bragg suspended for a game or two or something if that is found out to be true?
Yeah, and that's a Bill Self question. I'd be talking out of turn if I speculated about that. It'd be interesting to see if the coach talks about it today at his noon press conference. But, you know, clearly they're not happy. Now, yeah. You can't tell these guys that they can't go out and have a social life on stop day when a lot of their peers are out celebrating the end of the semester and all that. But there are certainly things you wouldn't want them to partake in. And if that's the case with him, I'm sure Coach Self will have some kind of, you know, disciplinary measure internally. What I'm talking about in saying, you know, we should have let the cake bake and shouldn't have been, I mean, this kid just got destroyed on Twitter. Yeah. Some of the most hurtful, hateful things you could imagine for people that thought they knew the story.
Yeah.
And were dead wrong. A picture of him in a Ray Rice type situation. Yeah. That's not fair. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. Absolutely 110%. And like I said, people sometimes convict people before letting the process play out. And that's how some people saw it right off the bat. I'm with you on that. Okay, now let's turn our attention to Davidson. What do we know about Davidson? I know a team that played North Carolina very close. Davidson always is well coached. And the last time KU played Davidson at Sprint Center, I believe Davidson won that ball game. And that's the opponent coming up on Saturday night for KU.
Yeah, these guys are good. They were picked fourth in the Atlantic 10. And you mentioned the North Carolina game. They're playing North Carolina and Kansas back-to-back with 10 days in between, mind you, for finals. But still, that's pretty ambitious scheduling. They already have, though, a couple of major conference wins. They went down and played in an event in Orlando and lost to Clemson, but then came back to beat Missouri and Arizona State. Actually had a four-game winning streak before a setback at the College of Charleston that really is the stub toe on the schedule at this point for them. And talking with their play-by-play guy yesterday, You know, they feel like they've got a great shot to win their league this year. Anytime you've got the type of 1-2 punch that they boast in Jack Gibbs and Peyton Aldridge, who averaged 44 points a game collectively, 24 and 20 respectively, that's clearly a great place to start. Now, will Kansas have an edge in the post, getting Carlton Bragg back and have some depth and size there that typically kind of rises to the top in these mid-major versus major conference matchups? Yes, they should. Does Kansas have better guard play overall? Yeah. I mean, Kansas has, when they're clicking, the best backcourt in America. But I do think Jack Gibbs is a force to be reckoned with. He gets to the stripe a lot. He shoots 83% when he gets there. This team as a whole shoots 81%. In a lot of ways, they're kind of the opposite of Kansas in shooting percentages because they've struggled from beyond the arc, 31% to KU's 43%, and yet they're 81% from the free throw line, whereas the Jayhawks have really struggled in that regard. So keeping them off the stripe, getting the edge on the glass, where I think Kansas should have it in this matchup, and then playing more Bill Self sound defense, I think, will be your biggest keys. You know, Coach Self in his 13 seasons at KU has been in the top eight nationally in field goal percentage defense in 9 of those 13 years. Typically, you see all Bill Self's teams hold the defense below 40% shooting, hold the opposition offense, I should say, below 40% shooting, and in some cases, significantly below it. And I think he feels like we've seen glimpses of that, but not anything close to sustaining it consistently to the degree that he feels this team is capable of defensively. So I think this is a great matchup when you've got two terrific scorers like they have to at least try to take one of them away and see what the rest of this roster can do against you, because that's been the big thing that I think Coach Supp's going to harp on the most over the next month when these guys don't have classes and you see a lot of improvement between semesters when they're just focusing on ball. He wants to see this team grow up dramatically on the defensive end of the floor and really start to play to their ability level there. And so I think this is a great first opportunity to do that.
One football question for you before we let you go. We would be remiss if we don't ask you this, and that is the big news, of course, David Beatty getting an extension, doubling his pay from $800,000 to $1.6 million, which outsiders who don't know the situation will certainly look at it and go, he's won 2 games in 2 years. He beat Texas. That was his one big win this year, of course, and that the Texas win allowed him to double his salary from $800,000 to $1.6 million. The flip side, of course, as you and I know, is that when recruits are trying to figure out where they're going to go, they would like to have some stability, and that's certainly what Kansas did, saying we believe in David Beatty, and we're going to sign him to the extension, we're giving him more money, and that certainly helps him when it comes to recruiting.
Oh, it absolutely does, and I think we saw that yesterday with 8 junior college players inked, including Peyton Bender, a former Washington State quarterback. I mean, they've been building momentum in terms of recruiting now, you know, over the last year and a half. We've talked a lot about the new locker room that they spent a couple million on. We've talked a lot about, you know, other inroads that they've made through enhancements facility-wise and enhancements on the staff with guys Beatty's added. But the one thing that they were running into that was a hard question to answer is when you've got opposing head coaches telling recruits, you don't want to sign with Kansas. You know, their guy makes the least amount of money in the league, and his deal is such that he could be gone tomorrow. Are they really going to commit to this guy and keep him around? So as you alluded to, this gives them a sense of security that they can pass on to prospective recruits that Kansas is committed to David Beatty and his staff. They are going to be around for a while. The arrow absolutely is pointing upward, and it's pointing onward as well. And this isn't just a, you know, okay, he won a game at the end of the year, we're going to get one more year, and he's done. Like, they feel like the wheels are in motion to take the next leap next year and maybe win 4 or 5 games. But they needed to have something tangible they could show the recruits. And I think the staff deserve the reward that they're going to get, too, because you've seen a lot more progress than just 2 wins would indicate. And anybody paying attention to the caliber of the athlete and just the day-to-day aspects of improvement around this program from what it was 2 years ago, we'll see much more than a coach that's gone 2-22 in that stretch. They see a situation where the groundwork's been laid, the infrastructure is there. Now we're going to really start to see this house get built. And I think this was a big step in doing that. And yesterday to see the 8 recruits they got, and there's going to be more coming obviously in February from the high school ranks, but a lot of excitement about the direction this thing is heading.
All right, Brian, time for an off-the-wall question. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Midway through the third quarter of the Warriors game against the New Orleans Pelicans in the NBA on Tuesday, Steph Curry knocked down a spinning jumper just inside the three-point line. It was one of those shots that only Steph Curry can make, it seems. It was the kind of shot that drew cheers from the New Orleans crowd, even. The shot was so good that Pelicans assistant coach Darren Erman even acknowledged it, giving the two-time reigning MVP a quick high five. That's right. The opposing team's assistant coach gave Steph Curry a high five, even though Curry made the shot right in front of their bench against the team he coaches. The off-the-wall question for you is, Mr. Haney, has any player ever high-fived you or low-fived you or done anything during a game?
You know what? It did happen at Texas Tech my second year. There was just a fiery moment with a dive near a sideline out-of-bounds play, and the guy got up and was pumping his chest, and there's a timeout on the floor, and he turned and looked at me, and he held out his fist, you know, to give a fist bump, and I'm like, heck yeah, I fist bumped him back. And it was awesome. It was emotional, but the action wasn't continuing or anything, so by all means, go for it. I don't know about the opposing coach doing it, though. I think there's a definite line crossed there, no matter how spectacular. But, I mean, at some point you got to tip your cap, but that doesn't mean you have to extend your hand while the game's still going.
Does it make any difference that that coach that I referred to that gave Steph Curry a high five, that he used to be a coach or with the Warriors staff, so he knows Steph Curry? Does that make it any more acceptable?
Maybe it does. Okay. Maybe it does. I think there's certainly a time and a place to see, you know, the camaraderie cross the lines. The most classic example for Kansas fans is when Eddie Sutton ran down the line to shake the hands of Nick Collison and Kirk Heinrich, a dying breed of four-year superstar college players in an era where everybody was leaving early. That was so classy, and you love that. And it was toward the end of the game, though. It wasn't like in the midst of game action. But I don't know about and I haven't seen the highlight, to be honest. We've been traveling the state this week with Coach Self and all his round ball luncheons, but that does catch me by surprise to hear that an assistant coach for the opposition did that.
It was interesting, that's for sure. Hey, Brian, we look forward to listening to the call against Davidson on Saturday evening at Sprint Center, and then we'll talk to you next Thursday and preview UNLV. Have a great call, man.
Thank you, and it was so appropriate you brought up Steph, because obviously he's the face of the franchise with Davidson. It's been interesting to see how much they've parlayed that 2008 run into future recruiting and future success, and now have Steph Curry as the face of that entire program. So that's a very apropos off the wall on your part.
Well, thank you, and I'm still thankful that Steph Curry didn't take the last shot in that regional final.
No kidding. No kidding. You and me both, buddy. Hey, thanks.
Take care, man. See ya.
Yep.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks here today, brought to you, as always, by our fine folks over at Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Michelle at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. It's the Hawks against Davidson, 5:30. Pregame coverage beginning on Z96.3 Lake, as you'll hear Brian Haney with the call from Sprint Center in Kansas City. The Jayhawks ranked third in the country. They're 9-1, and then KU will have some time off before they're at UNLV next Thursday. We always appreciate the time from the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, right here on the Sports Ticket.